Hey, it's the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and with me, as always, is Steve. How are you doing?
As always, John, I am great. It's a good day today, John.
It is a good day because we have Dan Raju, the co-founder and CEO of Tradier. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, John. Hey, Steve. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. As the name kind of implies, Tradier, it looks like you guys cover all kinds of trading, supporting advisors, embedded finance, APIs. So tell us, how is Tradier doing these days of COVID and war and upcoming inflation and but big funding in fintech? How are all those playing out for you guys?
Thanks for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. It's all net positive. I think it's been, simply said, it's been net very, very positive.
You're such a, you have to be an optimist to be an entrepreneur, I guess. It'll all work out.
Yeah, it's somebody told me, the definition of entrepreneurship almost two decades ago, and that is to find yourself at spots where you have choices that nobody else has. And that's what it is. And, the last 2 years, what we do at Tradier, as some of you might know, is, we are one of the larger brokerage fabrics in the country. What we do is we power hundreds of investing platforms and applications. Some of the most active traders in the market use us. That's kind of made us an expert in the whole active trading space. But this last couple of years has been fascinating. It's been fascinating, but it's been very, very good for the business, right? I mean, we kind of grew almost like 200%+. That's because, people are trading, they're trading more actively, they're more engaged in the financial markets than ever before. I've been in the space for 15, 16 years. I've never seen that much amount of hypersensitive engagement with the market. All this, fortunately or unfortunately, tends to drive people to want to stay on top of it. And for a big chunk of the US market, staying on top basically means making sure they protect their investments and they protect their interests. And trading happens to be a big part of that. And so we have seen tremendous volumes, tremendous growth for our business. So
any part of the business that you were surprised at especially well in the past few months?
Last couple of years, Steve and John, starting 2016, about 25 million people have started trading on their own. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people in the U.S. putting their own hard-earned money into the markets themselves. Now, this is not you giving your retirement account to somebody else and asking somebody to manage it, or as some employer-driven way of creating retirement for you. It is you and me, people like you and me, putting money, hard-earned money, post-tax money in most cases, into action. That trend has been going, but I was surprised by the sheer fact that the pandemic would create a reaction where people would not only culturally and socially and from a pure work environment perspective have the ability to focus on one thing and one thing only, and that's the capital markets. That the amount of interest that basically created in the market. People were at home. I guess if you're a gambler, you couldn't go to the casinos you can't bet on any sports. There are no sports, right? For all practical purposes. And they're at home.
AMC stock. It's all AMC stock.
And I have perspective on meme stocks. I'll find a way to tell you that in a second. But that the whole idea though that people would jump into the markets when things are tough was fascinating. I mean, what's fascinating was the fact that people jumped in, they traded, they tried to manage their money and created, a lot of growth in the markets in terms of numbers and volumes. Now, when you have a lot of people jumping in for the first time and reacting to every news cycle that they hear, you're going to get these meme stock AMC kind of rallies, right? Where there's no fundamentals behind something, but but people are just buying and selling that in great numbers. But, you know, those will come and go. And I think you'll see more and more, less and less of that. But what fascinated me was for the sheer fact that, you know, how people turned their energies or their productive energies into trading. It obviously created just not growth for us. I mean, I'm pretty sure every brokerage firm in this country has seen that much amount of growth or more. And so it's kind of fascinating.
Any indication as to whether the trade volumes will decrease, of course, as things begin sort of to open back up and people have other ways to kind of itch that gambling, or rather to scratch that gambling itch, you know,
back to the casinos,
exactly,
back to the sports.
Vegas is now open, baby. Baseball's back on. There's Vegas, the NBA. Does that mean less trading?
No, see, I mean, that element of, you know, investing from their homes into small things, right? I mean, that certainly was some part of the contributor and more the fun part of it. I think what drove that numbers was largely, what drove those numbers were largely, you know, people being worried about the markets, right? And so, and the fact that they had the tools in their hands to manage it has driven a big chunk of those volumes. But coming to your question, do you see those volumes changing? To some extent, we're already seeing it, right? Mm. We're already seeing it. If you take a look at the number of shares traded in 2020, 2021, and now in 2022, then the amount of equity trading volumes have come down, right? That they've come down in the sense that they have kind of tapered off. The rate of growth is not really that they were literally seeing month over month growth for a big chunk of 2020 and 2021. What you're seeing is a lot of traders who, and why is that? Why has that decrease not totally occurred, or why are you not seeing substantial declines even after the drivers have gone away? Is I think people have graduated to doing more advanced trading. So one trend we see is equity volumes have tapering off. Options volume, which is a more advanced way of playing in the market, those numbers continue to grow. So the options markets are booming now, right? So I see these I see this trend right now where people will jump into an asset class where when the drivers go away, two things happen. Is they a big chunk of them graduate to the next level of managing those drivers, and I see that with equities, and now I see that in crypto too. So in general, yeah. So what we're seeing in the market is equity volumes have tapered off, but I think the options and more advanced trading volumes, like people, you know, hedging and, you know, doing options trades and these kind of more complex order types, those have continued to grow, and I expect that to continue to grow. In fact, I was Kate and myself did a small thing on CNBC about the graduation effect in the market. And Kate Rooney covered it perfectly well. As to what they're seeing in the market, that is, you know, equity volumes have gone up, they've tapered off a little bit. Options volume have gone up slowly, but they continue to grow. So now you're having an amazing U.S. market where active trading is a mainstream involvement of roughly 125 million people. So it's kind of fascinating.
And you're helping expand the availability of places to offer trading through your APIs, embedded finance. What kind of use cases does that make sense? And where do you see where maybe that's not a good idea?
See, this is, I'll tell you, to answer the question, I mean, see, my background a little bit, I have a bachelor's in chemical engineering and a master's in computer science. I've always been an entrepreneur. I've had a couple of good entrepreneurial runs earlier in my career. And then I went to the enterprise side. I was a CIO for a couple of billion-dollar firms. I mean, then eventually, you know, after that, in 2000, in 2008, 2009, you know, I got into the fintech space. Kind of felt that, you know, how in the world would the entire market of the thing that all of us are the most proud of, it's our capital markets, have only five or six large players in it. And that's it. I mean, to serve this entire, the way the pride of what makes this country so good, is there are only five or six large retail providers. So my mission was, you know, can you flip that on its head? So some part of the mission of Tradier was, can you take that ability to invest? Then you either go to a Schwab or a Fidelity or an E-Trade or an Ameritrade or some simple app on the App Store, and or Robinhood or something like that. And why are there only those few options that are truly serving? And what I found in the market was the fact that that ability to trade and invest was kind of locked, because it's very, very burdensome. There is regulation, there is infrastructure, there is data, there is risk, there is compliance, there is the domain knowledge. It makes it, and the huge amount of capital that's required to get into it, the barriers of entry were too much. And so my idea and mission was, if I can truly take all this clunk out, right, for using my own entrepreneurial jargon into it, and abstract it out completely from and make it so easy that anybody could launch, the first thing is going to happen is going to create diversity in the market. A lot of companies will be able to offer the capability, number one. And number two is, these investors who are using these platforms will have a lot more choice, right? And, you know, so with that kind of the mission, you know, we wanted to truly build a fabric that anybody could build the investing applications, right? And so that was kind of the mission and theme of it, just to unbundle the traditional large brokerage firm and take that capabilities and make it available. Traders in particular are the upper end of the IQ spectrum that are there, right? And they're smart. They know how to make their decisions. They came into the market because they believe they can make better decisions.
Very good at flattering your customers.
Yeah, you know, they're very good.
My customers are brilliant to go with us. And very good, very good.
No, they're
smart people.
And I'm a trader myself, right? So I think from that perspective. And so, yeah, what we've done is, you know, they when given a better choice, I think they make more prudent choices. I think people make bad choices when they're given a choice of one. And so I think, yeah, on the whole, you know, it has served the market. Today, you know, anybody could launch an investing app on us. The few other firms have tried to do it after us. But I think it's good. Creating the choice in the market is very good.
You focused on social media. How would that work?
This is one of the interesting paradigms we see in the market, right? If you think about, I don't know, Steve and John, how often you buy and or trade, but anybody's
daily.
Idea.
I'm sorry.
Unsuccessfully, all the time. I lose money, like, yeah, daily, you wouldn't believe.
All the time. Non-stop.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's, but you still traded, right? So the if you think about how do you, the impulse to buy is not coming because you're inside a bank or a brokerage firm and saying, oh, since I'm in a brokerage firm, I'm going to use their service, right? It's mostly driven by you've heard something, you're following somebody, you've spoken to somebody, and you have basically something is connected with you about the company, or you are a user of that service. You're using Google, Apple, Starbucks, whatever it is, and you want to be a part of that story, or you believe in that business or its direction. So most of trading comes from social impulses. Now, I'll give you some interesting data. There are about 125 million traders in this country. Okay, out of that, about 50 million of them trade like the way you and I discussed, purely socially driven impulses. The remaining 65 million are more sophisticated. They trade based on a strategy and based upon an approach or based upon their beliefs. And out of that 65 million, about 10 plus million are absolutely active traders, right? They pump in about 90% of the volume into the market. But so what we wanted to do is bridge this gap between where the brokerage firms are and where social is. And APIs were a way by which if Steve is reading an article about Google and he falls in love with it, he can just go in from that article itself and trade it. So we kind of wanted to make open up trading in a way where people think rather than having to carry that and come inside the four walls of a brokerage firm. I mean, that was kind of the way we looked at the market at that time. You know, it has taken a whole new shape. I mean, we did, at that time when we started the business, I don't think I ever heard anyone talk about embedded finance. I guess then eventually the venture side of the Stack kicked in and came up with a fancy name for that called embedded
finance. I was getting a loan for a mattress or bedding products. Mm-hmm. It was a different thing, embedded finance.
Right. Yes, you see, in a way, right? I mean, I look at all of that as embedded finance in interesting ways. See, and what is embedded finance? I think embedded finance is trying to, you know, a traditional non-financial institution trying to offer financial services as a part of their service in order to increase retention or monetize their customers better, right?
So you're on a social media platform, and then you can just directly trade through that platform using your APIs?
Click, go.
That's click, it. Boom.
Yeah, and we and make then it
that's
that,
it.
That. That's it. We make it that easy. Yeah.
And so it's the hypothesis here is that the more trading, the better, right? But I think that there's been significant research saying that for most people who are active traders, they end up actually losing money. And the more you trade, the worse off you are. Do you have anything to sort of disincentivize what could be seen as potentially harmful behavior in terms of users using your platform to something that maybe they may not understand to the extent they should, or will this all be put through a layer of somebody who's actually an advisor who can understand their users' risk profile and things like that, so sort of enable them to get to where they are?
Yeah, and we do a lot of work. Very, very, very good question, by the way. We do some tremendous amount of work in order to make sure that the customer is protected. I mean, customer needs to be protected from so many things, impulses, number one. Number two is issues. And number three is also, being available for him when he needs a response, right? And so as we have tried to open up the four doors or the four walls, however you want to call it, we have built tremendous amount of what I call as smart constraints around how these trades are coming in, how they get flowed and how they push to the market. So that's a big part of the innovation that we have done. And what we've also done is, we've spent quite a bit of time ensuring that when platforms are connecting to us, they're focusing on education. In fact, just 2 days ago, we did an event with the CBOE, one of the largest options trading exchange in the world, entire education session all day, helping partners on how to educate their customers and how to help them be responsible. At the same time, we also try to make sure that within the system, if you try to do our system tries to catch if you are trying to, if we see trading behaviors that are basically what we believe is not in the best interest of the customer or the market in general. So what we have done is just not build an API and just give an access site, which is a part of the story. A big chunk of it is to build that, what I call as an arc of responsibility around that. And that starts with, partnering with the best platforms in the market, number one, helping them and enabling them to educate the customers, right? Convenience also comes with a responsibility, right? And on top of that, build a layer of mitigating controls. And on top of that, build a layer of execution controls. So we have tried to build that stack and it has helped us, right? It has helped us because if you don't do that right, then you're going to have issues. I'll give you the example of why we have here. Example of why we have done so well. If you remember when we had those issues last year, so many meme stock rallies, so many brokerage firms, were shutting down all kinds of trading. We never did. We were on top of that from the beginning. For us, having transparency and responsibility came, and we're all traders. I mean, we have built, most of the team at Tradier, we were the guys who were involved in building what you see as Ally Invest or some of these, and a whole bunch of other trading platforms. We came from some large brokerage firms. So we took that responsibility of opening up with a lot of responsibility, and we spent years building those controls, and it has shown, right? Every time there is an issue, we have been there, we have responded to customers, and we have helped the partners. And so we've got mature and better with it. It took us quite a bit of effort to get to 300 partners.
You make compliance sound like a piece of cake, but
it's not.
It's a big challenge, yeah? Do you see some rules coming down the road, or have there been some particular compliance or unclear regulatory things that make things difficult? I know there's not a lot of clarity with crypto trading, which you guys support. What are the challenges you see on the regulatory side?
See, like I said, what we fundamentally believe is, regulation is good. In general, we believe regulation is good. I mean, are there areas where the regulatory policy can be better? Yeah, absolutely, right? And
us alone, that'd be better. Yeah,
that'll be better. But then you'll complain about it once we're injured, right? So, I think regulatory policy in general is very, very good. I think sometimes it's not as responsive as you would want. For example, I mean, I've been vocally against the more recent, the Fed dragging its feet on interest rates, right? I mean, come on, guys, you can't be talking about interest rates for like 7 months saying we'll increase and not really act on it, right?
It's coming.
Yeah. So it has created about close to 6-7 months of human absolute turmoil in the market, right? I generally believe that if they talk about it, then they need to publish a schedule and go at it, right? I do understand there's some sensitivity around some geopolitical issues, but putting that aside, the equities regulatory environment is very, very mature. It gives the room for us to operate. It actually goes ahead and lets the customer come in the best protected way than anywhere in the world. We've all learned to be a part of that and interact productively with the regulators and build a productive system. Crypto, on the other hand, has been a little bit, let's be honest about it, right? It's been a wild west, right? For a while.
Yeah, that's super clear. Or regulation by enforcement sometimes.
Sometimes.
You don't know until you get into trouble.
Right. And so, I think this is what I expect to happen in 2022. I think 2022 is going to be the year of crypto regulation. Okay.
Okay. I'm writing this down.
Yeah.
And I hold you to it.
Which we actually saw, right? I think the White House announced some new regulations late last week. So they're inching toward that position. But I'm curious as to what you think will actually come down the pipe.
Yeah, see if you take a look at the White House, the Biden
executive order,
release. It's kind of fascinating, right? Because it's fascinating because for the first time, anything that has come out officially, instead of questioning the existence of that stack, is basically talking about how do you make it more transparent. So at least I look at it and say, okay, these guys are past the point where they're talking about, is crypto a legit currency or not? In fact, we at Tradier are trying to offer crypto to that market space as a product launch very soon. But putting that aside, that is what will happen. So when you regulate that, you get those people coming in and involved in crypto, that will increase the volume substantially. When it increases the volume substantially, you get out of this, a single tweet by Elon Musk is having a great price fluctuation, because that much amount of volume and that much amount of smart money, when it comes to it, it actually stabilizes it. So I'm really looking for, I'm probably the only guy who's one of those few guys who's saying it, but the best thing that can happen is basically regulation. And so I think it's coming. I was excited to see what the announcement was. At least I felt like the government has moved from what do we do with this to let's do something with it. That's the easiest way to describe it.
Yeah, it makes it definitely easier for large established players to jump in and people to be less worried about if this is a real thing or not. If trusted parties can get out there, big brand names are getting out there to kind of legitimizes everything for sure.
Yeah. And you also are launching your own crypto trading platform, right?
Yeah. And that core essence I was talking about earlier, right? We're going to do exactly that way, unbundle it, right? I mean, when we launch, it's not like we have one new app coming up. We will let crypto be traded from potentially 300, right? or a few hundred of these apps coming in. And we're going to do it differently. A couple of elements that I truly want to bring to the market, and we've had some really smart people who helped me think this through. We hired Steve and Peter and some of these guys, Stephen McQuay, I call, and some smart people from other places who have bought and not only an element of technology, but a great element of purpose to it. So when we are launching, you know, what we are going to do is we're going to unbundle it like we do everything else, number one. But we're also going to do a few other things. And that's a mission that we are on. Number one is we are not going to do we truly believe in the bottom of our hearts that existing crypto platforms are ripping off retail customers. I really believe that. Number one is, you know, they're offering interest rates, which don't make any sense in some cases. In many cases, they're charging 100 basis points. Really? 100 basis points? That's like, and why is a brokerage firm charging you 100? Why is a platform charging 100 basis points? What does it have to do with the size of the trade? It's like this, right? It's like I'm an Uber driver. The fact that I'm carrying a billionaire behind me, does it really matter? It only matters I'm taking a person from point X to point Y for me to have a role to play in the size of the trade. So we kind of want to cap some of that a little bit. So what we are going to do is we are going to be launching crypto with almost like a capped pricing model. Mm-hmm. We are not going to, you know, be involved into interest rates, you know, offering interest. I don't think it works the benefit of the customer. We're going to offer a very transparent product, unbundled across hundreds of these platforms, and offer a capped price for the first time. I'm revealing all the beans. I'll have my product guys all over me right after this call. But that's what we're going to do, is bring an element of responsibility and transparency to the crypto stuff like we're doing in the equity and option space. It's kind of exciting. This year we're going to be launching, you know, as the firm grows, you know, we launched equity, then options, and now we're getting into crypto. Then we're going to get into futures. And then we're also going to go ahead and, for the first time by Q1 next year, we are going to have the full-fledged trading platforms marketplace for crypto, equities, options, and futures, all driven around a common price model with an element of transparency. If you're an active trader, you know, you're going to get the best product in the market. So the way we look at ourselves is, people who come into the market, there are the Robin Hoods, the Stashes, the Acorns, the M1s, the Webulls, all those folks are catching or trying to, and these folks do an amazing job of getting people into the market. The legacy brokerage firms are all, you know, they're all asset driven. And so there's a gap in the market for the traditional retail active trading space. And we have found our path into that, and we're growing and serving that segment. So, and we're going to do it with a lot of responsibility and empowerment through technology. So
no jail time, please. No jail time. Yeah, let's keep that out of it. So it sounds like you have some great plans building up the company. What are some of the obstacles, or what would you like to see removed that would help your growth in the next few years? What would help you? More money? Better, more people?
I mean, right now, the challenges for, you know, the challenges for Tradier right now, you know, I'm sure you guys have talked about this. I mean, there is a scarcity of absolute scarcity of, you know, technology folks in the market, right? And so hiring good people is an absolute scarcity right now. So I think if we can hire fast enough the right people, I think it'll go a long way. And the other thing is, some part of us, as we are thinking, the other challenge, I think we are getting ready to basically, you know, get out there is, you know, there's an internationalization of the US market. I'm not sure how many people talk about it, in the sense that the traditional, a lot of international customers are opening accounts and dealing with the US markets because of local currency issues, and also so the geopolitical issues in those countries push them to invest in the US markets. And, you know, as we let alone dealing with the US regulation, you know, we are basically trying to navigate to international regulation at this time too. So, and some of them are where US is with crypto, some of these countries are with equities right now in that time. So I think what the firm needs to largely do is to hire smart people, and as we grow internationally, you know, just be responsible about it and go after meaningful growth rather than just hyped up growth. So we've always been that firm. underneath the radar, you know, just doing one step at a time, but doing it right. And I hope we can continue to do that.
Yeah, keep up the good work for sure. And if you're a talented developer, Tradier, by the way, tradier.com, I think is where you want to go. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, some great info. That's Dan Raju, the co-founder and CEO of Tradier. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news. And thank you for listening.